Warning: The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
A proposal. Today, I am challenging Senator Obama to a bowl off, a bowling night, right here in Pennsylvania. Winner take all. I'll even spot him two frames. It's time for his campaign to get out of the gutter and allow all of the pins to be counted. And I'm prepared to play this game all the way to the 10th frame. And when this game is over, the American people will know. When that phone rings at 3 a.m., they'll have a president who's ready to bowl on day one. So let's strike a deal and go bowling for delegates. We don't have a moment to spare because it's already April Fool's Day. So happy April Fool's Day, everybody.
Do you think this is funny, or is this the last gasp of a delusional woman? Welcome to the Savage Nation. You know, the first rule of comedy is that it better be funny before you use it. This woman is not funny. This woman is reaching a point of delusional madness. First, there was the big lie about Bosnia, which even her liberal patsies have said enough is enough. Now a bowl off as an April Fool's joke when we have so many real problems in America and the world? Inappropriate. But what's the choice? The choice is a man who's hiding behind a very, very, very dangerous past, and that's Obama. Now, why do I say a dangerous past? Well, let me level with you. Here's my opinion. I think that the man is at war with himself between the white side and the black side, and he shifts back and forth, not knowing which side to take at any one time. He was in high school known as Barry, and he went to a very expensive private high school in Hawaii, even though he's reinvented himself as a poor black boy who raised himself up by his bootstraps, which is ludicrous. His white grandmother raised him, paid for the whole thing herself. And yet he had the nerve to attack his white grandmother a few weeks ago, saying that when she was around people of color, she bridled or something, or she became defensive and made offensive comments about black people. No, he's a very confused young man with no track record what to speak of. And his church, though, speaks very loudly indeed. And I'm going to go back to his pastor and his church, because there's a new story that's come out today in the Washington Times, which I've linked up for your reading enjoyment on michaelsavage.com. Obama's church, the church that he's worshipped in for 20 years, publicly declares that its ministry is founded on a 1960s book that espouses, quote, the destruction of the white enemy, close quote. The destruction of the white enemy, close quote. Now, I know that the spokesmouths for Obama will say that what his preacher says, what his church says, has no bearing upon who he is. I disagree entirely. And again, I'll make my point in the only way I know how, which is through hard logic. What if a Republican candidate went to a church where there was a Ku Klux Klan member as pastor for 20 years, a man who donned the white hat and burned crosses at night, but during the day, for 80% of the time, he just talked about Jesus and he talked about love and compassion. And he did the normal hocus-pocus, you know, with robes and whatever. But at night he burned crosses and he wore the pointy hat and he put nooses over trees. Do you think the vermin in the Associated Puke division of the Associated Press, do you think the skeleton crews left at ABC, CBS, and NBC and the midstream media would say that's acceptable for the Republican candidate to have attended such a church for 20 years? Or do you think that the jerks in the midstream media would finally say enough is enough, this candidate is a racist at heart? Well, you know what they'd say. So that's why I asked the question. Obama's church founded on a radical creed that says the destruction of the white enemy, 1960s book. You see, Trinity United Church of Christ website says its teachings are based on the black liberation theology of James H. Cone and his 1969 book called Black Theology and Black Power. Cone wrote this, quote, "What we need is the divine love as expressed in black power, which is the power of black people to destroy their oppressors here and now by any means at their disposal. Unless God is participating in this holy activity, we must reject his love." So in other words, a God of peace and a God of love is a God they reject, only a God of hate and murder. Mr. Cone, now a so-called professor at the so-called Union Theological Seminary in New York City, says, quote, "Black theology will accept only the love of God which participates in the destruction of the white enemy," close quote. Now, as you well know, Obama's campaign says that he vehemently disagrees with those tenets. And his spokesmouth says it's absurd to suggest that he or anyone should be held responsible for every quote in every book read by a member of their church, said Obama's spokesmouth, Reed Cherlin. His spokesmouth goes on to say, Barack Hussein Obama is not a theologian, and what he learned in church is to love Jesus and work on behalf of his fellow man, regardless of race, class, and blah, 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 blah. But why was he still there 20 years later? Why would this racist preacher Wright have been chosen to marry the Obamas? Why would the racist preacher Wright have been chosen to baptize their two little children? Why would the racist preacher Wright have given a sermon that inspired Barack Hussein Obama to title his book, The Audacity of Hope? Now, I'm sure that Mr. Obama does not espouse the radical features of the black liberation theology practiced at his church. He doesn't need to anymore. Look how far he's gotten without it. But what worries me is what's underneath the surface of this very smooth exterior. Remember this, the liberation theology and the black value system to which his membership ascribe is a clear commitment to the social and spiritual enhancement of only the black race, said Reverend Corey Hodges, who is black, and he wrote last year in the Salt Lake Tribune the following. Even more troubling is Wright's use of the pulpit to perpetuate racial division. The bulletin's pastor's page included essays that said Israel and South Africa, quote, worked on an ethnic bomb that kills blacks and Arabs, compared Israel to Nazi Germany, and quoted leaders of the terrorist group Hamas calling Israel a deformed modern apartheid state. And yet Jews, Jewish liberals in New York are lining up to vote for Obama. Jews in Hollywood raising millions of dollars for Obama. Why? Liberalism is a mental disorder, and it's a very serious mental disorder. I do not know if there's a cure. It may be an incurable disease. I'm going to give you another example today from my own life. I was riding in an elevator in an apartment building where I reside. It was very cold out here in San Francisco. In fact, I was wearing a top coat. It's true I've just gotten over pneumonia, or I'm getting over it. I don't feel much anymore of that. But I wore a top coat because it's breezy and some of the streets are cold. So I'm in the elevator. In the elevator with me is an elderly woman, maybe 70, in good shape. I get in, so she comments sort of to the wall, boy, it must be colder out than, or something like that. I said, yes, it can be breezy on the corners. Then she adds, well, she said there was frost on the golf course yesterday morning. And the elevator's now going up and up and up. I said, oh, frost on the golf course yesterday morning. I said, I guess the fools still believe in global warming, even though there's frost on the golf course in the morning. She says to me, well, I don't know who to believe. She says, you don't believe in global warming? But now notice this, you don't believe? You're not a believer? I said, ma'am, I don't believe. I know. I'm a PhD scientist. And Al Gore is the greatest faker this century has ever seen. He belongs in a prison for what he's done to people like you. At which point she put her tail between her legs, the golfer with frost on the lawn, and scurried out of the elevator, afraid that she had encountered somebody who was hateful, somebody who was angry. I am angry. I'm pissed off that I live in a world filled with brainwashed fools who think they're educated and enlightened and progressive. In other words, they see frost on the lawn, they see the coldest winter in decades, and they don't trust what they themselves see and feel. Instead, they trust what they're told to believe to be true. And so they've been told to believe that Obama's a fair-minded man. Hillary is an oppressed woman. Global warming is caused by mankind. And it goes on and on. I mean, it's a sad state of events when people are this brainwashed. And you know something? When a population is this brainwashed, anything can and anything will happen. I can guarantee you. They are gullible, and they are dangerously gullible. But let me go back to you fools who think that Obama's a nice guy. In a bulletin last year, his pastor Wright lashed out at the news media for scrutinizing the church, blaming, quote, racist United States of America and, quote, white arrogance for distracting the country from more important issues such as the Iraq War and Hurricane Katrina victims. You hear this? It goes on and on. So now you can't even scrutinize the church. But it gets worse. Now I'm going to shift gears. Al Gore is such a despot and such a charlatan, but he has so much money, this despot and charlatan Al Gore. And as I said, like the animals that hibernate, he disappeared during the coldest winter on record in many a decade. And all of a sudden, the faker Al Gore appeared yesterday or the day before, just in time for the spring thaw to peddle his global warming hypothesis. And he announces he's going to spend $300 million, and he signed up, if you can believe it, Al Sharpton, Pat Robertson, and one other person who I forget it. Oh, Newt Gingrich, the GOPAC tick, to be his environmental consultants on the ad campaign about the environment. Now, you got to listen to this ignorant street gutter rat, in my opinion, Al Sharpton. I am so pissed off that America takes this charlatan street rat seriously. I will tell you right now, I taught the seventh grade. I taught through college. I taught many different grades. I can guarantee you if I had Al Sharpton as a student and I said to him, Al, why is the sky blue? Al, why are clouds white? Al, explain how the seasons occur. Tell me why seasons are mild in some places and in four seasons in other places. That man wouldn't even know this earth had an axis. That man couldn't explain why the seasons occur. I don't think Al Gore could. Now, Pat Robertson. Pat Robertson has now signed on to the global warming myth because there's enough money involved? Pat Robertson? And you believed him all these years? There's an old Germanic phrase that goes like this, and then I'm going to go to break. The bigger the klafka, the bigger the nafka. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating our citizens as less than human.
I got a call from Al Gore, and I've known Al Gore since he was in the White House as vice president. I have a lot of respect for him, and he said that he was doing this huge campaign ad, bringing together unlikely people, for a message that meant something to everybody. And if people are sincere, they can say we can vehemently disagree on issues, but we all have got to live on this planet. And he asked, would I come and do an ad with Reverend Robertson? At first, I thought he was kidding. When I found that he was not kidding, I said,
all right,
sure.
Turn it off. I can only listen to so much of this person, this Al Sharpton. We still don't know where he got his divinity degree from, so I will not refer to him as Reverend Al Sharpton. I don't work for Fox News. But this Al Sharpton character, Al Gore is so desperate that he would go in the gutter and get Al Sharpton. He'd go in the gutter and get Pat Robertson. He'd go in the gutter and get the gutters of Washington, D.C., and get the leftover Newt Gingrich. He does not have reputable scientists on his side, by the way. He says that those who oppose his theory are like those who believe in a flat earth theory. Well, there are quite a few scientists, like they number in the many hundreds, and we have their names. But common sense, of course, would dictate that this theory is simply a theory, and there's evidence that we may be entering actually a period of global cooling. We may actually be entering a new little ice age, the exact opposite of what Al Gore says. So he has to reach down into the gutters of New York for Sharpton, the gutters of Washington, D.C. for Newt Gingrich to support his lie. This is the stuff that Leni Riefenstahl, the propagandist for Hitler, would be proud of. And this is the state of affairs that we have in America today, that a con man like Al Gore is not immediately arrested and put in prison for bilking the public. He's robbing people. He's robbing people. He will never debate a scientist who disagrees with him. They say he's going to run for office. I doubt he'll run for office for one reason. He would then have to debate the people who know he's a charlatan on this global warming hypothesis. He can't afford to do it because he's never had it so good. Jeff, WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, we got a racist, a communist, and a liberal. And McCain's going to finish whatever's left of the Republican Party, I'm afraid.
Oh, so wait, you mean the three choices we have? A racist, we know who that is. The communist, we know who that is. And McCain is the liberal.
Correct.
Uh-huh. Well, I know we certainly don't have a conservative. That's well understood. Yeah, no, McCain will be Bush 3. He'll be Bush 3.
Win, and they're going to fool everybody.
Yeah, I know there's going to be ticker tape parades when the Republicans win, and they will win, make no mistake about it. There's no question in my mind that unless they dig up a live boy or a dead woman, which I doubt they'll do, McCain is going to win.
You heard about Evan Zella, the Marine.
No, I don't want to get this sidetracked. I had a really bad day yesterday, and the last thing I need is sidetrack. What a day. It was one of those days. I went on my bicycle for the first time in a week. So I wanted to top off the rear tire. Was it just a quickie? Went to a gas station, new Chevron station, free air. And the tire wasn't flat. It was good. I wanted to top it. I like a hard tire. It let all the air out of my tire. The pump was broken. So I was bewildered. How am I going to get home? So I went into the thing, and the two Hispanic guys, they were actually very nice. White guys wouldn't have done it. They would have told me to drop dead. The Hispanic guys actually came out and helped me get the pump to work. Then I went home and I was grating Parmesan cheese on a homemade lunch. I cut my thumb open with the grater. I didn't know I even did it. I'm eating the spaghetti with no sauce, and I see red all over the fork and all over the noodles. And I say, this is odd. I didn't put marinara sauce on it. The marinara sauce was my hand bleeding. I mean, it was one of those crazy days. It must have been the birthday or something. It was the pheromones weren't operating or something. I don't know. And then I wake up to this. The communist, the racist, and the liberal. There it is. That's the world I live in.
Savage.
I know that Al was a boy preacher with the Church of God in Christ, but he was, and that's where he got some of his skills. And he's a terrific guy. I enjoyed it immensely because we're supposed to be fighting each other, so I couldn't be but so nice. But it was a fun moment. We had a superb director and good equipment. But the biggest thing is what he said is we care about the planet. We all live here, and we don't want to pollute our air and pollute our water and kill the fish and the wildlife. We want to conserve this place where we're all living.
Bigger the Klafka, the bigger the Nafka. And you thought Pat Robertson was a trustworthy man. Now he's in cahoots with Al Sharpton and Al Gore to pull the wool over your eyes about global warming. You say to me, well, wouldn't you do the same? What if Al Gore offered you $1 million? Would you do it? I wouldn't. I'll tell you what. I'll put it out right here and now on the air. I actually believe every word I say, and I stand by my words, and I fall by my words. And I'm going to tell you right now, I've paid a lot of penalties for what I believe in. But it doesn't matter to me. The truth is what matters. I'm going to tell you right now, I challenge anybody to offer me a real $1 million to come out and testify that global warming is real and it's caused by man, that it's anthropogenic, because I won't accept it. Did you hear what I just said to you? I would not accept a $1 million offer to lie. But I don't think you can get that offer from many other people in the media. That's my feeling. Nah, I really don't think so. I think anything's for sale. I think virtually everyone's for sale. I think that in droves, the endangered species that we know as the white American male is selling out. In another era, the white male was the bulwark of America. He stood tall against Hitler in World War II. He built the biggest economy in the world through the 50s and 60s. He faced down the threat of communism during the Cold War. And now it seems to me that the white male has given up, sold out. White male of today is different than that of years past. The 401k, the retirement, the parachute, the cars, the estate, the jets, the summer palace, the winter palace. So he won't speak out. Can't rock the boat. Got a good thing going. Doesn't want to screw it up. Who am I talking about? Well, it couldn't be Pat Robertson who made a deal with Al Sharpton and Al Gore to make up a fantasy on global warming to get more liberals putting money into the collection play, could it? It couldn't be the deluded Newt who thinks that he still has a chance to be president with a little help from his environmentalist friends, could it? It couldn't be Bob Barr. Remember him? Bob Barr, who now says he's considering running for the presidency. The same Bob Barr who pretended to be a conservative, then went to work for the ACLU because they dangled money in front of his face. Couldn't be Bob Dole, who became a foreign lobbyist for Dubai, could it? Couldn't be any of these men. Where are the leaders among white males of America? Are there any left? Have they all turned into prostate cases and sailed off into the sunset? I don't know. There are a lot of white males that used to stand on principle. That's what I saw. Not all, but many did. The American white male used to be proud to proclaim loudly that America was the best nation on the face of the earth. Now they fall silent. Now they want more FaceTime with sports stars. Now they want more FaceTime with degenerate drug addicts on HBO. But their self-indulgence will come back to haunt them. You see, their retirement communities won't save them from the Islamo-fascists. Their accounts in Zurich won't protect them from the future enemies of freedom. Their $5,000 golf clubs won't save them when the enemy is at the gate. You see, that's the story. If the white male chooses to go gently into that good night, America is through, and there'll be no boat left to rock. So this is an amazing turn of events when we see so many turncoats who claim to have been conservatives now cozying up to the biggest grand marshal of the liberal fraud, Al Gore. It's unbelievable to me. But the world is an amazing place. It's a fascinating place. No two people are identical. No two people are identical. You can ask anybody who's met people. No two people are identical. Even identical twins aren't identical. That's the amazing thing. We are all like snowflakes. It's pretty bewildering when you think about it. It's easy to walk down a street in a crowded city and say, I can't take the crowd. And everyone becomes one mass called the crowd. But they're all individuals like you. Maybe they're saying, I can't take the crowd. And you're part of that mass. See the snowflake theory? You ask a man who is Don Juan, for example. You ask him if all women are alike. He'll tell you, no, they're all different. You ask a woman who's the equivalent of the Don Juanette, a Donna Juanette, whatever. She'll tell you, no, all men are different. All men are different. All women are different. Sexually, mentally, psychologically, you name it. We're all different. And that's the beauty. That's how God intended it. He didn't want one mass of humanity being the same. That's for the ex-Soviet Union. That's for China when they try to nail everybody into one little form. That's for Venezuela under that dictator slime bag, Hugo Chavez, the good friend of that most deluded of actors. That most deluded of actors, Sean Penn. The most deluded man in America, Sean Penn, Danny Glover, you name it. Harry Belafonte, supporting a dictator who murders his enemies. Supporting the closing down of a television station as though it's freedom of speech. Why did they do it? Well, it's simple. Chavez threw $20 million at one of them and said, we'll let you make a movie here in my new studio, in Hitler's new studio in Venezuela. That's Danny Glover for you. What did Sean Penn get out of it? With him, it may be strictly ideological. After all, the red apple doesn't fall far from the red tree. Grand Rapids, Michigan. Jose, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage. There's a lot that is not being said about the connection of black liberation theology, the Church of Reverend Wright, and the aspects of the speech of hope in the speeches of Obama, Senator Obama. They're all interconnected. What we hear Reverend Wright's speech is really the last kicking efforts of the decay of what liberation theology has become, which Pope Paul II warned. And in the debate in the media, of course, we're not listening to the methodology that it's the essence of not only black liberation theology, but liberation theology in general, which is a Marxist.
Oh, wait. Black liberation theology is very clear. It espouses the destruction of the white enemy. Let's start with the first tenet of black liberation theology.
Yes.
But it's one of its chief founding stones is Marxist theology, which is the overthrow of the bourgeoisie. In the case of black liberation theology, it's the overthrowing of the white man, not just the bourgeoisie.
Exactly. What it has done is it has taken a Marxist philosophy and applied it to a theological point of view. And in that case, you're right. Instead of a class struggle, it's a race struggle. But the method and the analysis is the same. And, for example...
But how does Obama get away with saying that this is a welcoming church, and if you guys went there on a Sunday, you would feel right at home? He says you would see people talking about Jesus and mercy and sin. Then he says that doesn't excuse what Reverend Wright said, but I do think it's important just to put it in context.
Yeah, but the problem is that if you go to the mission statement of the church itself, then you can see the influence of James Cone in that. James Cone was interviewed just a couple of days ago, and he says that black liberation theology is more about self-love than love of the enemy, and that when he wrote that book, he wanted to blend the best of MLK with Malcolm X, so that what he wanted to do was to, on one hand, bring Marxist methodology to theology and also popular traditional black theology. Martin Luther.
All right, so we're getting a good lesson in who Obama is spiritually, and we don't like what we see. And his media friends are covering for him. They will not discuss it the way you and I are discussing it, and the deeper meaning of this man's formative years in this church and what he really must believe in his heart of hearts. Thanks for the call. I don't want to get into theology of these racists, frankly. It's just enough that you know that behind it all, behind that silk-smooth front, there's something ominous indeed. You know? And I don't believe Obama's denials whatsoever. You know, there's another element here that very few people are willing to talk about, but I think it's worth mentioning on this show right now in the Savage Nation, which is, do you think Obama is appealing to Hispanics in this country? There's a huge division, by the way, to begin with, between the two races, black folks and Hispanic folks. And I don't think Obama's unified Hispanics with his message. In fact, I would suggest, and I don't have any hard data on this, that the Hispanic voter, the legal Hispanic voter right now is probably equally split in voting for Hillary and McCain. In fact, knowing something about the Hispanic culture, which is very patriarchal, very brave, the man is the dominant force in the family, the man's honor is the most important thing to the man. That's why the Hispanic people are very proud to know that more medals of honor were granted to people of Hispanic descent in World War II, if I'm not mistaken, an inordinate number. Let's put it to you that way. I don't want to be wrong on it. We all know that if you watch the fighting matches, you ask anybody about Mexican boxers, it's very hard to knock them down. They'd rather die than get knocked down. They'd rather stand and be killed than be knocked down. Okay, you talk about pride and strength. But this is indicative of the people themselves. I'm making a very important point here. The more the Hispanic individual is actually asked, I think the more they're going to actually vote for a man like McCain, who has been there and done that. The more they see he's actually flown jets, was shot down, survived the shootdown, and then was tortured mercilessly for 5 years by the Vietnamese in the Hanoi Hilton. I mean, they broke the man's back. They hung him by his shoulders. He doesn't talk about it, you know, and I'm not a big fan of of McCain's policies when it comes to immigration and whatnot, you know that. But I'm not going to go as far as that golf bag and say vote for Hillary. That is so childish and stupid. That is just stupid. It's something you'd get from a man like that. But the fact of the matter is, I'm talking about Obama here and the Hispanic community. And I don't believe the Hispanic community is impressed with Obama. I think they would look through him as a lightweight. And if you were to put Obama, they're certainly not going to vote for Hillary in any great number, other than she's a Democrat. But the more they see she's a liar, the less they're going to vote for her. I believe McCain is going to sweep the Hispanic community once they get to know the guy, particularly his war record. And there's a very good soundbite today, which I'd like to play apropos of this point. And that is the story about Senator John McCain talking about his time in captivity. You may not know it, but his father was Admiral McCain, who was in charge of the Pacific Theater during the Vietnam War. And yet his father, although he was the admiral in charge of the Pacific, and his son was in a prison camp in Vietnam, his father did not let that interfere with his duty as the admiral of the Pacific Theater. Listen to clip 17.
My father seldom spoke of my captivity to anyone outside the family, and never in public. He prayed on his knees every night for my safe return. Yet when duty required it, he gave the order for B-52s to bomb Hanoi in close proximity in the prison to which I live.
See, now McCain is doing the right thing. He's got to talk more and more and more about his service to the country. And he's got to talk more and more and more about his imprisonment and his the torture upon him. And that will get him over the hump. At that point, we just got to pray that we can influence him to be a little bit more of an honest conservative, you see. But let's not forget the fact that he's the only one running for office who's flown jets in combat and suffered merciless torture at the hands of our good friends in Vietnam. Yeah. And he survived it, by the way. And that he's risen from the ashes. I mean, you got to give the man credit for that. I mean, his track record since then is kind of pathetic. But given the choice, you know which way we're going to go. He knows that, too, which is why he won't come before the conservative audiences. He will stay away in droves. He'll go to the soft, you know, the girl in talk radio that everyone makes believe is a conservative. The girl, he'll go to the golfer, maybe. I don't know if he'll go to the golfer. He might go to the leprechaun. The lep is a reliable middle-of-the-roader. And he might get to Wallbanger because Wallbanger is a go-along, get-along kind of vanilla guy. And everyone knows that. Everyone knows in radio he's a vanilla host. Well, there's nothing wrong with vanilla ice cream. I myself like Rocky Road. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We now move on to the Middle East, where hours after Israel removed anti-terror roadblocks as a goodwill gesture at the suggestion of Condoleezza Rice, a few Arabs attempted to kidnap Jews and hold them for ransom, the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, so-called. Joining us from Jerusalem is Aaron Klein. Aaron, what a story this is. Why are the Israelis committing suicide like this, national suicide?
This specific story is stunning. This is an Israeli, two Israelis who were waiting for a bus. And just as Israel, the Israeli Defense Forces, removed a specific roadblock in that very area, terrorists infiltrated and attempted to either kidnap or kill these Jews. But what's stunning here is that this was not just the suggestion of Condoleezza Rice. It was actually the micromanagement of Condoleezza Rice. She was here on a Sunday. And she specifically demanded that Israel remove 50 roadblocks. And then actually, I found out that the Jerusalem consulate, the United States consulate in Jerusalem, oversaw the removal of some of these roadblocks immediately on Sunday after she decreed that they should be removed.
All right, so Condoleezza Rice says to the Israelis, take down the roadblocks. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall. The Israelis, like the little puppets they've become, tear down the wall. And immediately thereafter, the so-called Martyrs Brigade of Palestinian murderers approach Israelis, including a teenager, at a hitching stop between the West Bank Jewish communities of Shiloh and Eli, about 20 miles from Jerusalem. And just as the terrorist knife came down toward the Israeli man, what happened?
This is when the Israeli man was armed. He pulled out his pistol and then shot at the terrorist. The terrorist then fell to the floor and apparently reached into his pocket, maybe to detonate an explosive device. It turns out, though, just to take out another knife. And this is when the armed Israeli man, who would have been a victim, shot again at the terrorist, this time killing him. Again, this is just literally...
Well, hold on. Let's pause you. Has Condoleezza Rice called and demanded that there be a trial against the Israeli for not going quietly into the night and letting the Palestinian knife him to death? I mean, after all, Condoleezza Rice could demand that the Jews lay down and let their throats be cut.
That's what she did. She actually has called on Israel now to ease restrictions between Egypt and the Gaza Strip. This is, of course...
Well, that way they can move in heavy weapons without having to waste any money on digging tunnels. See, they're wasting a lot of their time and money digging tunnels. This way they could just bring the weapons in and spend more money on bombs and missiles to kill Jews with. I mean, that makes sense if you're on their side, doesn't it?
Indeed, she has brokered these deals time and again, and every time what happens is the Palestinians use it to enhance their terrorist infrastructure and bring...
Aaron, wait a minute. This gets crazier. I just read that in a meeting last week with the Palestinian so-called Prime Minister Fayyad, IDF Minister Ehud Barak agreed to supply the Palestinians with ammunition, armored vehicles, rubber bullets, and night vision equipment. In addition, Israel allowed the United States to transfer high-powered assault rifles to the Palestinian so-called police. Are they insane?
This is a specific police force that I actually know a lot about because I've spent some time with them. This is the Palestinian police, and on it, known members of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade terrorist group serve. And so many times, Israel has allowed America to transfer weapons and ammunition specifically. And as soon as they do, there's an immediate increase in terrorist attacks against Jews.
Aaron, you know, I'll tell you, I like your articles, but I rarely read them because I can't believe what I'm reading. And it pains me to see the Jews, a once proud people in Israel, able to defend themselves and give the middle finger to the Jew haters around the world. I see the Jews becoming like just like the Holocaust Jews again. What in the world is happening there?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that it's the Jews, because today you saw that there was an armed Jew and he shot back at the terrorists. This is, it's the Israeli...
Well, wait a minute. Wouldn't the Peace Now psychotic pot smokers want the Jews to be disarmed except when they're in the military? I'll bet you there's a movement afoot in Israel to disarm the civilian population. Am I wrong about that?
There is. Of course there is, but it's the same as the wacko liberal movements that you have in the United States. It doesn't mean that Americans want to give up of the war on terror. It's that the liberals want to. And here in Israel, it's really, you have the same divide. It's the Israeli government working against the Jewish people, working against Israel, and you have these wackos in Peace Now. But I think that the majority of Israelis really want to get rid of this government and absolutely...
Wait, why don't the Israelis hold a trial against Condoleezza Rice and try her for crimes against humanity? Why don't they hold a mock trial against Condoleezza Rice for being the human that she appears to be? Why does she hate Israelis so much?
I think they should. They should have her, Shimon Peres, and Ehud Olmert all up there, line them up and try them, convict them, and either sentence them to whatever they should get.
Why not? Try them in absentia the way they tried Pinochet. Is this going to stop? Is there anyone on the horizon who can save the Jewish people, Aaron, or is it a foregone conclusion that in 50 years the sands of the desert will overtake Tel Aviv and Jerusalem and they'll be gone? I'll be right back. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I respectfully disagree. I think that is something that is personal to my family. I'm sure there are things that are personal to your family that you don't think are anyone else's business either.
Now, that's Chelsea Clinton, who's been stumping for her mom. And, of course, she's as disingenuous as her mother, because asking a question about her mother, what is she saying to the boy? There's things personal about your family as well. But the boy's father's not running for office. So she's learned pretty good, I got to tell you. She grew up in some home. But wait, it gets worse. She goes on and says, you shouldn't vote for my mother because of what my father did or against her. It's unbelievable. I think this was another you know, person who has problems. But, you know, that's the world we all do. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Obama's church founded on radical creed, which is the destruction of the white enemy. We've been talking about that. We have been talking about the Israelis being forced to commit suicide by George Bush's puppet, Condoleezza Rice. In order to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. In this case, the egg is Israel. And we're next. I mean, Israel's the canary, I'm telling you, in the mining shaft. What they're doing to Israel, what they did to Serbia, they're doing to America by breaking our borders, by polyglotting our language, by permitting people to vote in 16 different languages, and by debasing our culture to the point where people don't even know there is a culture in America. Trust me on what I just said to you. Trust me, I'm 100% right. And I'm not Reverend Wright. I'm Michael Savage. So here we are, here we sit. We wake up, and we cannot believe what we see. a disgraced stooge, a former congressman who pretended to be a conservative in the 90s, who led the impeachment charges against Clinton, then goes to work for the ACLU, and now this stooge says he wants to run for the president. He's running up a trial balloon. Oh, the world's waiting for Bob Barr. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We're lining up for you, Bob. No one knows who you are. Over 60 million people have gone on my website and said, Mike, leave radio and run for the presidency. Now, I don't know how many of them are valid. I really don't know. But you know, I'm starting to get an itch now, an anger every day. Something in me is starting to boil over. I can't take it anymore. And something in me is starting to say, Mike, what if, just what if you gave them a run for their money? Just what if you said, you know what, the heck with it, I'm doing it. And that's it. Let the chips fall where they may. Now, they're calling this the billion-dollar presidency. And you understand what's at stake here, that you don't win the presidency, you buy the presidency in America, just as you buy the Senate seats and you buy the congressional seats. Everything is for sale. And with enough money, even a man as unknown and as flawed as Barry Obama can get up there and pretend he's presidential material because he has enough money behind him. And of course, it doesn't hurt when you have the sympathizers and the associated pukes to work for you. Or at the midstream media folks, they all love him because he represents them. He is somewhat like them. He's shallow. He has no historical basis. And fundamentally, he'd like to bring it all down, girl. So, in other words, I have no media behind me. The media hates me. They hate me. I don't have the money to run. That's number two. So I'm a realist at the end of the day. You know, I'm struggling right now to run this campaign. To defend my show from the questionable group CAIR. And a good story came out, by the way, for those of you who have helped me, the 25 or 23,000 of you who have sent money to the Michael Savage Defense Fund. I got to get the story. This is unbelievable. It's on my website, michaelsavage.com. The web server put it up. I'll never get it now. When I need something, I can't get it. I work alone. That's the problem. And it's a copyright case. It's a huge case. They will send it to me. It's a great case. I'll tell the people about it because, oh, I remember now. I remember it now. The guy who put out the film in Holland showing Islam to have links to terrorism in the Quran itself. And make no mistake about it, there are passages in the Quran that call for killing and maiming and such. He used an image, a cartoon image of Muhammad with a fuse in his turban, you know, ticking. The cartoonist of that cartoon has threatened to sue the filmmaker, saying that he violated his copyright by using the cartoon without permission. And the filmmaker has now agreed to remove the cartoon from the film because he knows he'd lose the copyright case. That's a hugely important story for those of you who have sent money to my defense fund. And the reason it's important is that that's exactly how we're fighting the CAIR case. At the first stage, the Clinton-appointed judge has not found in my favor because, as I told you, in San Francisco, there's no such thing as a fair trial for a conservative, even at the federal level. There is no such thing as a fair trial whatsoever. It's interesting to see that in Holland, copyright claims can be enforced irrespective of the politics of the individual. It's sad to see that a Clinton-appointed judge, Judge Ilston, here in San Francisco, would have not seen the bigger issue and would have not immediately seen the case for what it is. But nevertheless, I'm going to go on. And I do have to win that case, not only for myself, but for freedom of speech itself. And until I win that case, I can't do anything else. It's frankly, I think that I'm doing too much. I never intended to be this involved. I got the 3-hour-a-day radio show. I got the website to run. I got this lawsuit that I have to fight. You know, I could have rolled over and not fought them either. Believe me, I could have just said the heck with it. I could shut down the website and not run it. It's not like I need the money because it's not a lot of money in the website. It's not a money thing. It's like an addendum to the show. So maybe I'm being foolish. You know, I see a lot of people basically just cash it all in and walk away and no one sees them again. And some days I feel like doing that. Some days I feel like just saying, it's over. I've done this for 14 years. I don't want to do anymore. I've done more than most 1,000 people. You know, I have published well over 20 books, and they're really good books, despite what the libs might say. Some of my earliest books are still in print. Let them match that. Let any of these detractors of Michael Savage match me and what I've done in my life. They couldn't shine my little toe. Most of the people who pretend that I'm not important. Well, I'm not important in terms of the world. We'll all be gone in time. The sands of time sweep over all of us, and we're all forgotten by and large. I don't think there's going to be a statue to me that a pigeon will poop on, frankly. It doesn't matter to me. That's not the issue. The issue is giving the day its run, its 24-hour run, while you're alive. Why I do it, it's almost automatic at this point. I got to tell you, there was a time in my life that I was really low, beaten down by the social engineer's ears called liberals, who said white males need not apply. They almost killed me. They stole my birthright. They gave jobs to unqualified women and unqualified minorities. And, of course, as a result, you see the universities having become what they are today. Take a look at what's teaching there today. Take a look at what goes on in these universities. They're like houses of ill repute, not universities. That's because men like me were categorically denied what they should have been given, the right to teach. But, okay, I went beyond it. I teach a class that in one 15-minute period, on this show, I have a bigger audience than most professors have in their entire lifetime. So fate worked out for me. But it wasn't by accident. It was through hard work. I didn't give in. I don't quit. I don't quit. It's not in my genes. And that's the problem with me right now. I actually think that I'd like to walk away from it all and never be heard from again. Honestly, sometimes I do. It's not that I'm tired. You don't understand. I could do this radio show for another 10 years. Or I could walk away at the end of this year and never be heard from again. It's almost the same to me at this point. And part of this is this disheartened, part of this disheartened view comes from John McCain, George Bush. After 7 years of this charlatan, George Bush, the man has virtually gutted the entire conservative movement. He has eviscerated the Republican Party. He has destroyed our border with Mexico. He has destroyed our financial institutions. I don't want to go down the litany. And in a way, I feel responsible of having had George Bush elected. I wasn't a great fan of his in 2000 or 04. I chose him over the other two, saying he was the lesser of two evils. Was he? Was George Bush the lesser of two evils when you look back upon it? I'm not sure. Could they have done worse than he's done? I'm not so sure. In fact, I'm starting to think that if Al Gore had won in 04, he wouldn't have gotten away with half of the liberal things that George Bush has been able to get away with because he's pulled the wool over the eyes of so many Republicans. So I'm not so sure I've done so much good. In a way, I'm starting to think maybe I've done more harm than good, despite my meaningful intentions. You know what I'm saying? My well-meaning intentions. No, I'm telling you the way it is. And I just may want to hang up the gloves and walk away and never be heard from again. That's how I feel. Now, I didn't plan on talking about this personal stuff right now, but it just came out of me like bile. After an illness. I'll be right back. Savage. Hey, look, if I wanted to, I could be the Ross Perot of this election. I mean, I could probably get 10 to 15 million people to vote for me. That could change the course of American history. McCain would have to understand that he can only give the middle finger to the conservative base for so long. He cannot energize them. Hey, look, we all know he's having trouble raising the big money. And that is because the big money are prostitutes, and they're going to the Hillary Obama side because they feel they may win. They never were conservative. They never were Republican. They only went where the money was. For a while, it was the Republicans. Now they see the Democrats are probably going to win, so they're trying to buy some favors from the other side. So that's why McCain can't get their money, because they don't think the guy's electable. And the problem with McCain is the same problem that we saw with Giuliani. The same idiocy, the same people who were advising Giuliani, the same mindset, let's put it to you that way. The same bartender who ran Giuliani off the highway. The same bartender may as well be running McCain's campaign. Ah, don't go on the conservative shows. You don't need those nuts. You could do it without them. And they got nowhere to go anyway, John. They're going to come around to you. That's what Giuliani thought. Giuliani's gone, forgotten. Gone and forgotten. No one will remember him in a few months if they do any more at all anywhere. Good luck to him. I hope he does well with his various business enterprises. But the point is that McCain is following the same stratagem, and it's not working. It's not working, truthfully. And that's worrisome, incidentally. But sometimes I have the fantasy of saying, you know what, I think I'm going to give these guys a run for the money, all these professional politicians. Little unknown talk show host, huh? Never heard of me? Not important enough to come on my show? Oh, really? Let's see who pulls the votes in, John. Let's see who can get 15 million votes that you would have gotten, and let's see if you'll debate me at that point. Can't compare with you on the war record. I'll take my hat off to you right on the stage, and I'll give you that. But if I can name all the generals who were brave in war and stupid as presidents, it might put you on the defensive, John. I can name quite a few. Very good in war and very bad in peace. You aren't even that good in war, by the way, if you want to get into it. But we wouldn't go there. We don't have to go there. I'll take my hat off to you on the war issue right away. Then where do you want to go, John? On borders, language, culture? Let's start with borders, John. You voted to break the borders even further. You went along with Kennedy in the most scandalous treason we've ever seen for a conservative Republican. You voted with Kennedy to destroy our borders by granting amnesty to the lawbreakers. And write down the list and the guy's toast. The other two, I wouldn't even have to worry about them. They've already done so much damage to each other, there'll be very little left to argue with. So trust me, believe me, this is starting to bother me now. I don't like McCain's ignoring you, and I may force him to come to you by going to him. That's what I'm starting to think. At least I'm having a fantasy about it, you know, a little fantasy. But on the other hand, I'd be a terrible campaigner. The last man on earth who would want to travel around and kiss babies and shake hands is me. I wouldn't even do it. Ask people. I've been invited to travel around the country to give speeches in auditoriums with 50,000 people. I don't do it. It's not that I disrespect the audience, and not that I don't want to do it. I don't do it. I don't do it. I'd rather not do it. That's all. It's not a proper way for me to live. I never enjoy travel. I certainly wouldn't want to do it now. So it's enough about me. McCain shares high school memories. Who is advising this man? Who is advising him with this garbage? Every time he has a chance to take down Obama, he takes Obama's side. He's playing the nice middle-of-the-road, get-along-go-along kind of golf guy. It's not working. He's not gaining traction. Here's a guy who could have four-wheel drive, and he's got one wheel that's spinning already in the mud. The guy, if he only had somebody who knew how to shift the transmission, could put McCain into four-wheel drive. Instead, he's got one wheel that's starting to slip and spin in the mud. That's all. The mud they're throwing at him. 1-800-449-8255. In the next segment, I have a great segment. It's a man named Thor Halvorsen, president and CEO of the Human Rights Advocate, founded the Human Rights Foundation. It's not the human rights group that we know. It's the correct one. You see, in 1993, his father, a diplomat with the rank of ambassador, was falsely imprisoned, tortured, and savagely beaten in a Venezuelan jail. Mr. Halvorsen's father was freed on Christmas Eve 1993 because of his son's help. All charges against him were dropped. But then in August of 2004, Mr. Halvorsen's mother, a child psychologist, was brutally gunned down and wounded by members of the Venezuelan government security apparatus while attending a peaceful public gathering. He has pulled a mask off Sean Penn. He has shown Sean Penn, Danny Glover, and a few others to be the communist stooges that they appear to be. And he's going to tell you about Sean Penn. And if you ever saw the movie, what was it called about America? I forget the name of the movie. Team America, where a cartoon was made about Sean Penn, because he was such a moron. Hollywood's A-list. Do you remember the Team America World Police, a puppeteer's parody about the American government? Do you remember one of the puppets that was lampooned was Oscar winner Sean Penn, who in the film laments the invasion of Iraq by harking back to a time it was a happy place? Play the Sean Penn piece from the cartoon.
Last year, I went to Iraq. Before Team America showed up, it was a happy place. They had flowery meadows and rainbow skies and rivers made of chocolate where the children danced and laughed and played with gumdrop smiles.
Well, that's Sean Penn, who's no longer married and living in the mansion of Marin County. We don't know where he's living, but thank God he's probably gone from the county. It's safe again to drive around without worrying about, running into him, accidentally hitting his fender. But on David Letterman's show, Sean Penn gushed about Hugo Chavez as a fascinating guy who had done incredible things for Venezuelans poor. So Letterman said to him, Chavez shut down a television station, RCTV, and that should trouble you as a self-styled journalist. So then Penn looked at the camera and said that, they tried to kill Chavez every day. They were encouraging his assassination every day. But that's not true. It's as though Sean Penn, the puppet, became the real man. And we'll talk about Sean Puppet. Savage.
Last year, I went to Iraq. Before Team America showed up, it was a happy place. They had flowery meadows and rainbow skies and rivers made of chocolate where the children danced and laughed and played with gumdrop smiles.
That is the puppet, Sean Penn, who was parodied in the Team America World Police movie, which was great. And Sean Penn, of course, is a very happy supporter of the dictator Chavez and all things far left. Joining us right now is Thor Halvorsen. Thor Halvorsen, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, well, I told my listeners about what happened to your poor father and your poor mother. Are you from Venezuela originally?
Yes, I was born in Venezuela and reared there as well. I am, in fact, a Venezuelan citizen.
So you saw the country go from a democratic nation to this socialist dictatorship under Chavez, and yet we witness the horror of people like Sean Penn, Danny Glover, and these other leftists making up stories about how great he is. What's in it for them? I know that with Danny Glover, it was the $20 million to make a movie. Isn't that a reality?
That's exactly right. Danny Glover received a payoff of $20 million, it's unfortunate, given that this is a man who has often on the screen been a hero of human rights and someone who's done great things on the screen. It's very sad when he gives up his principles and essentially becomes a shill for a man like Hugo Chavez, who has done monstrosities and has perpetuated poverty and done terrible things, supported terrorism in Venezuela, and currently poses a real threat to the security of the entire hemisphere.
How did your mother get shot and killed by him in 93, in 04 rather?
She was not killed. Luckily, my mother is alive and well. She was shot. She was a victim of an assassination attempt while she was at a public rally asking Jimmy Carter to please stay in Venezuela to certify the election. Instead, Carter left early without...
Wait a minute. Carter was one of the reasons Chavez was able to engineer this election. Carter was the reason that Chavez had some legitimacy. Carter is the man who brought... hell to the world through Iran. Now he's done it with Venezuela. Carter is the reason.
Yes, that's exactly right. And just before he left, in order to get back to his wife's birthday, many people petitioned him, look, you created this mess, you must now stay. But instead, he left. And yeah. The people in Hollywood who keep supporting Hugo Chavez, what they see is they see someone who opposes the United States. And I can tell you, as someone who was not born in this magnificent country, that this is a great country. It's a country that has a lot of faults, but what's remarkable about America is it recognizes those faults, and sometimes it becomes so outraged that it fixes things. In a country like Venezuela, you have a thug like Hugo Chavez who has used lethal force against innocent protesters, and he is beloved by people like Janine Garofalo, by people like Kevin Spacey and Oliver Stone, because he is anti-Bush. They are willing to do...
Okay, Oliver Stone is a long-known crank who will publish anything that makes America look bad. Danny Glover is simply, in my opinion, a prostitute who pretends to be a leftist and got the money to make a movie. But Sean Penn interests me for a number of reasons. He should know better. He seems like a rather intelligent man, but you had an interaction with him at the Oscars, didn't you?
I did. I had an unfortunate interaction. I wrote about it for a column for FoxNews.com where I go into detail because I always approach people in good faith. And there are numerous political prisoners in Venezuela today, many men who are in prison right now for doing nothing whatsoever except expressing their freedom of speech. And as a result of that, Chavez has put them in prison. All sorts of crimes have been piled up against them, and he's brooking no dissent. And Sean Penn should know better.
So you went up to Sean Penn at the Oscars and you tried to tell him this?
Well, actually, he was. I did, and we happened to be in the smoking section, and we were chatting, and then when we discussed this matter, he quickly went from a smile to a frown. I guess a friend of mine says some people have compartmentalized brain syndrome. They have very good way of rationalizing certain things, and then in other things, they're so emotional that they lose their ability to make a rational decision. And in his case...
So you talked about the political prisoners of the Chavez government in Venezuela, and he started to say Daniel Day-Lewis? What was that about?
Refused to hear anything about it. He
but why would he say Daniel Day-Lewis, Daniel Day-Lewis? What was that all about?
I honestly don't know. I'm not a psychologist or psychiatrist, but I have a feeling that when confronted with something you don't want to see or hear, you kind of cover your ears. And continuing to repeat the same phrase over and over again is the equivalent of covering your ears. You don't let anyone else say anything. And then he just started to walk away.
You were trying to tell him about the stories of Venezuelan dissidents in prison for doing nothing but criticizing the government.
Correct.
And Penn walked away from you. But so has Kevin Spacey, Danny Glover, Harry Belafonte, Naomi Campbell, Oliver Stone, Cindy Shahan, so-called Professor Cornel West. What is it about Sean Penn that intrigues me is that his father was a lifetime leftist in Hollywood. You know that, of course, right?
Leo Penn.
Very few people know that his father was a diehard far-left activist in Hollywood.
Yes, Leo Penn.
Leo Penn. Very, very few people know that about him. But shouldn't this man know something about reality at this stage of his life? He lived in a mansion in Ross, California for many years with a lovely wife and a lovely family, and yet he espoused communistic philosophy on a daily basis while living in a mansion. Didn't he understand the hypocrisy of that?
That hypocrisy is replicated thousands of times in this country, and many people who live very well think that they can dictate to others. It's a little hypocritical because it's a question of do as I say, not as I do. It would be wonderful if other people had the opportunity to have a mansion like so many of these stars do, but they seem to be hell-bent on making sure nobody else has that opportunity by putting in place certain policies, like those of Hugo Chavez, that are going to perpetually necessitate that the only people with money will be government officials. Everyone else will be mired in misery.
All right, but what about the political prisoners of Venezuela, like Humberto Quintero? Tell the people of the show, please, who Humberto Quintero is.
Humberto Quintero is a perfect example. Quintero is he was a lieutenant colonel in the National Guard of Venezuela. He single-handedly tracked and trapped one of the most important terrorists in South America from the FARC terrorist organization that so affects Colombia. And he handed him over to the Colombian authorities. He was, within 2 days, he was found and arrested, put in prison, tortured horrendously.
Wait. Now, I think you lost us. You mean the lieutenant colonel who caught the terrorist was imprisoned, not
correct.
The terrorist?
Correct.
Okay. So who did this to him? Who imprisoned the brave army lieutenant who tracked down the coke dealer?
The Chavez government did this because the Chavez...
Oh, wait a minute. Well, why would Chavez take one of his own army lieutenants who tracked down a coke dealer, one of the major FARC terrorist coke dealers, and imprison him? Why?
Because Chavez has repeatedly said that he supports the FARC. And the reality is he supports them with money. He supports them with air support. He gives them refuge. He gives them medical care. And on top of that, he serves as a kind of diplomatic envoy of the FARC everywhere he goes. So he was trapping someone who Chavez liked very much. And as a result,
my God,
of that,
so this man is that evil. So this Venezuelan thug is that evil. Now, where is this brave Army Lieutenant Colonel today? What prison is he in?
Now in prison, in a prison called Ramo Verde. This is a prison. I've been there. It's really quite horrendous. Imagine a prison that is miles away from any public transportation. The only way you can get there is by private car. So if you happen to be in prison, if your family does not have a car, it's going to be very difficult to get there. The prison has no running water, no medical care. The only food that the prisoners receive, their families need to bring to them. So by putting the person in prison, the entire family is in prison because someone needs to every day cook food.
Well, isn't that interesting that men like Oliver Stone and Sean Penn would lobby for better prison care in America where they're given a gold standard of prison care with medical care and lawyers. And here is this hero suffering in a torture in a dungeon, a rat-infested dungeon, without medical care, without running water. And the Hollywood idiots have nothing to say about him. How come Human Rights Watch hasn't visited this prison, Ramo Verde, in Venezuela, or have they?
Human Rights Watch is absolutely oblivious to political prisoners in Venezuela. I've met with the head of Human Rights Watch's Latin America division, Jose Miguel Vivanco, and he actually told me, but there are no political prisoners in Venezuela. When I started naming them and going through them alphabetically, he kept looking at me saying, I've never heard of these people. Unfortunately, many of these organizations have become bureaucratized. And so what they do is they spend more time having their expensive five-star dinners and expensive lunches with lobbyists than they do actually doing the work that people donate for.
And of course, they're all given over to the far-left cause. Causes, as you well know. But let's go back again to the biggest dupe of them all, and that would be Sean Penn. Is he in it for the money or the ideology?
I very much doubt Sean Penn needs a payoff from Hugo Chavez. I very much doubt he's taken any money from the Venezuelan government. It is, I'm sure that he gets some kind of psychological payoff from essentially giving a pat on the back to a man who declares himself as the number one anti-Bush person in the world. And given Sean Penn's personal views, see, the remarkable thing is...
Wait a minute, he could be anti-Bush, but he's also anti-freedom, anti-democracy. He also supports the torture of political prisoners. He supported a narcotics trafficker of FARC. Doesn't Sean Penn understand any of this?
It seems to be irrelevant, because it seems to be the only thing he cares about is that Chavez opposes Bush. And so he's happy to parrot the line that Chavez is doing wonders for Venezuela's poor. Anyone who visits Venezuela can see that that is not the case at all.
What's happened to the middle class under Chavez, the dictator?
It has virtually disappeared, and there was a very large one.
What do you mean it's disappeared? Really disappeared?
Yes, it has disappeared in terms of people falling out of the middle class below the poverty line. Absolutely.
What's happened to private property under this bloated dictator, Chavez?
Well, let me put it to you this way. Chavez has nationalized the telephone company. The reason he did that, of course, was that he could have complete control over people's telephone conversations. He has nationalized every aspect of the oil company, whereas before there was private investment in oil, he has nationalized it all. He has nationalized the airline. He has nationalized most of the core industries that Venezuela had. He has nationalized.
Has he nationalized the banks?
Not yet. He has threatened it repeatedly.
Well, wait a minute. So he's a step behind Bush. Bush is talking about nationalizing banks in the U.S. So in some ways, Bush is actually moving ahead of Chavez in terms of grabbing more power. But that's just an aside. So the middle class, have they lost their property or they just can't afford to maintain it?
Oh, there are so many people who have lost their property. He has invaded massive amounts of land. He has taken away farms from so many people who had active working farms. He has taken it away, despite the fact that the Venezuelan government owns more land than anyone else in Venezuela. So, but the important thing here to remember is this is not just a Venezuelan problem. The Chavez ideology has already spread to Bolivia, to Ecuador, to Nicaragua. It is already spreading into smaller countries in the Caribbean.
No, I see this. The man is trying to foment a Cuban-style revolution throughout South America. We're speaking with a very important man, Thor Halvorsen. He's written a great article called Hollywood A-Listers Prove Ignorance in Supporting Hugo Chavez. Please stay with us because I would like to ask Mr. Halvorsen whether or not he thinks there's a chance that the coming administration in America will conduct a military operation against Chavez right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Said that liberalism is a mental disorder, and we know that there are many Hollywood idiots who don't do as they do as they tell you to do. In other words, they lead one life and tell you to lead another. They all mock the communist lifestyle while living the high on the hog, capitalist lifestyle. The biggest offender being Oliver Stone, and the next I would say in line would be Sean Penn. With us right now is a gentleman, Mr. Halvorsen from the Human Rights Foundation. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Quickly, do you think there's any chance of military intervention to topple the dictator Chavez now or in the future?
I think such a move would be a terrible idea. I think that the problems in South America right now and with Chavez need to be resolved there by people there. What the United States could do is get out of the way, meaning the United States could stop putting all sorts of blocks and obstacles. The U.S. ambassador in Venezuela, in fact, for two administrations, was one of Chavez's closest allies, and often making remarks like, oh, but the opposition is also guilty of excesses. The only thing the Venezuelan opposition is guilty of is being hyper-tolerant as their rights are being taken away. I do think that the U.S. should any idea of military intervention is a very bad one, because it will only lead to what Chavez wants, which is to have a battle with the United States. He is a psychopath. He is a narcissist. He wants to go down in a blaze of glory and a hail of bullets.
He thinks he's Simon Bolivar.
The irony, of course, is Simon Bolivar, by today's standards, would be considered a hard-right conservative.
Well, I know that. I understand that JFK would be considered a hard-right president compared to George Bush. But having said that, you know, we have to look at what happened to Zimbabwe under Mugabe. I mean, people said don't intervene, let the people work it out on their own. The man gutted the country. He decimated it, like with a scythe. He decimated Zimbabwe to the point where the people can't feed themselves. Isn't that likely to happen if they let this? He's a young man yet, this monster.
Yes. My point was not to not do anything. The first thing we should do is get out of the way. The second thing we should do is put as many resources as we can. And by this, I don't necessarily mean the U.S. government. I don't think government is the solution to problems. I think many times they end up being the problem. What we need to do is empower people who need help, people in the opposition, the media that is being shut down, journalists who are trying to get the word out, students who are protesting. Let's help them. How do we help them? Everything from continuing to raise awareness about this. Let's understand that, yes, there are problems in the Middle East, but there are problems a lot closer to the United States, problems that could be, in the long run, much more dramatically problematic. When you have 300 million people living under regimes that hate democracy and hate the United States, that are only a couple of hours' flight from Texas or Florida, that's when I think people should start realizing we need to figure out what's going on in the South.
Look, you know what you're talking about. You were born there. Your father was imprisoned for no reason. Your mother was shot for no reason by this dictator. So you know what you're talking about. Are there Venezuelan agents in the United States of America?
Absolutely. There are numerous. Chavez spends millions of dollars in this country, millions, on TR. He spends tens of millions on heating oil. Joe Kennedy is an agent of the Chavez government. Why he has not been under investigation for shilling for Chavez is beyond me. You have an experience.
Well, the answer is because his name is Kennedy. They can get away with anything. Have you ever been threatened since your parents are so high profile and your father was imprisoned for no reason? Your mother was shot by this dictator. Have you had any threats to your life?
Well, one of my colleagues was shot on January 4th by the Chavez government as we were getting ready to meet in Caracas. She was shot in the back once. Her boyfriend with her was shot five times. This is the director of research for my foundation here in New York. And
Well, I hope that you have some security. How do people help you, Mr. Halverson? What can we do?
There are worse things than dying, and living in an unfree world is a lot worse. What I ask people is if they can just raise awareness about what Chavez is doing, write letters to the editor whenever you see a mention.
How do we help you directly? Do you have a quick website you can give us, anything that I'd like to help you with?
The website is humanrightsfoundation.org.
But let's make sure it's humanrightsfoundation.org, not that other despicable left-wing organization with the same first two words. Humanrightsfoundation.org, correct?
Absolutely.
Well, I wish you great luck. You're one of the brave men of our time, and you're fighting a fascinating and brave battle. It's the stuff that a movie should be made about. Unfortunately, this group of clowns are not the ones to make that movie. Thanks for being with us, Thor Halverson, Hollywood A-listers prove ignorance in supporting Hugo Chavez. The best story on Venezuela I've done yet. Thank you for listening.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The amount that Vice President, former Vice President Gore put in, it will make it a discussion, I think, by getting unlikely people together, will make it a discussion. And let me say, Mr. Gore made it clear he was not asking either of us to endorse things that we don't believe. The fact that we can have the debate on how to save the planet is what he wants. So the focus is that we should be talking about.
You con man, you.
Save the planet. If we can make the debate.
You're going to save the planet?
If we can best save the planet, then I think all of us have done our job. And that's all Al Gore asked us to do. And I think we'd have been less than public servants to not try and do that.
Well, I didn't know that Al was a boy preacher with the Church of God in Christ, but he was.
This way to Jesus.
I enjoyed it immensely. We're supposed to be fighting each other, so I couldn't be but so nice. But it was a fun moment. We had a superb director and good equipment. But the biggest thing is what he said is we care about the planet. We all live here.
Oh, yeah, we care about the planet.
We pollute our air and pollute our water and kill the fish and the wildlife. We want to conserve this place where we're all living.
Oh, you're such a good man. Look, the bigger the klafka, the bigger the nafka. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Would you have believed you'd wake up one morning and a man like Al Sharpton, Pat Robertson, and Newt Gingrich would have been hired by a man as low as Al Gore to proselytize about a subject they know nothing, virtually nothing about? I can guarantee you that Al Sharpton could not explain why the sky is blue, why clouds are white, and why there are four seasons in some places that are more extreme than others. I can guarantee you that he doesn't have a seventh grade knowledge of science. I can guarantee you that Al Gore doesn't know the answers to those questions. He'll probably bone up on them now. This is the greatest surprise I've ever seen. And the reason I'm so opposed to these people being brought out like this is because we're entering a stage of intellectual fascism. If there's enough money to go around and you could buy people like prostitutes, I mean, we'd expect it from a few of those. Would you have expected it from Pat Robertson? Did he jump for a buck like this? Newt Gingrich, yes, I would have expected it from. The go-pack tick will go wherever there's blood. He'll attach himself to wherever there's blood. He's always been that way, as far as I can tell. That's why I called him the go-pack tick back in this political zoo days. But to reach into the gutter for a guy like Sharpton, an uneducated man like this, to talk about saving the planet? Does it get any crazier than this? And if they can get away with the mass hysteria and the mass propaganda about anthropogenic warming, meaning mankind is causing this warming, solely causing this warming, why we can wind up with a country like Venezuela, where human rights are taken away from us under the guise of protecting human rights, where freedom of speech is taken away from us under the guise of protecting freedom of speech. We've heard it already when they try to shut down talk radio. They said, well, we believe in freedom of speech. We just don't believe in hate speech. Now, what is hate speech? Well, it's anything the dictator doesn't agree with. Chavez doesn't like anyone who opposes him. That's hate speech. Homosexuals don't like anybody who stands up to their agenda. That's hate speech. You see how what I'm talking about? Remember, the First Amendment was not written to protect polite speech. Let me reiterate. The First Amendment that you enjoy was not written by the Founding Fathers to protect polite talk. It was written to protect talk that offends. Do you understand that? This is all about my Freedom of Speech Award that I was granted by the Talkers Convention, and it's on my DVD. Many of you bought it. And now we come back to the propaganda of this election. We got the propaganda of the unknown man, Obama, and of course the veneer is coming off the wood. The plaster is coming off. The stucco is coming off the edifice of Obama, and underneath it is not a very pleasant. There's not a very pleasant construction. Not when you see Reverend Wright as the, let us say, shall we say, I wouldn't say psychological. I would say the, whatever you want to call it, theological. The theological foundation of Obama is not very pleasant to look at. And I see a dictator inside the nice, slick Obama. Inside the nice, slick Obama is a man who can get away with taking away our freedoms under the guise of advancing the freedoms of the human race. W.O.R., Al, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Michael. Michael, I'll tell you the truth. What you said was so true because I was just going to tell you this. You know, I don't see a Barack Obama presidency as someone that would oppose Hugo Chavez. If anything, I think he would be in bed with Hugo Chavez immediately.
He'd be in bed with Chavez and Ahmadinejad. Didn't he say that he would talk to America's enemies? He wouldn't ignore them? Didn't he say that?
Absolutely, Mike. And you know what, Mike?
So in other words, it's 1939, and we have a presidential candidate on the far left saying, I would talk to Adolf Hitler.
And
because, after all, he's not such a bad man, he's the will of the German people.
I think that this type of person, a Barack Obama, would rob our freedoms from us.
Do you think John McCain would go along with killing talk radio? I know that Obama would and Hillary would. There's no question in my mind. Do you think McCain would join Trent Lott and the other despicable pirates who want to destroy talk radio?
I think he's less likely to do it, though, Michael. But
So do I. That's right. He's less likely, but there's no surety of that. John McCain is not to be trusted on virtually anything. He's for John McCain. Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255 is the Savage Nation. Did you hear the latest scandal about Nancy Pelosi? Did you hear what she did to the military? Prior to the Easter recess, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi was forced to intervene with Defense Secretary Robert Gates to force him to get Democrat Rep. Tammy Baldwin's lesbian partner on a military flight for a congressional fact-finding trip to Europe. Pelosi strong-armed the Pentagon to make the Pentagon fly the lesbian's girlfriend on the flight. Now, the Pentagon has a don't ask, don't tell policy. Pelosi, who pretends to be sensitive to the gay rights issue, but does not want to be drawn into a situation where it appears she is dictating policy for the use of military planes, of course, was caught red-handed right here with her pants down. You see, under House guidelines, members of Congress may take their spouses with them on military flights if there is room for them, and, quote, when it is necessary for protocol purposes. Now, why would you want to bring a lesbian partner for protocol purposes unless you were trying to advance the lesbian agenda? Baldwin is the only openly lesbian woman elected to Congress. And although she exchanged wedding vows with her girlfriend in 1998 in her so-called home state of Wisconsin, her own state does not officially recognize homosexual marriage. And military officials were unwilling to consider the woman a spouse within the meaning of the House guidelines. But that didn't stop old Pelosi, the Catholic Italian grandmother, from forcing the military to take a lesbian lover along on an official flight. There's the story, ladies and gentlemen. That's the sad state of America today. Every day and in every way, the radical homosexual agenda, the radical left-wing agenda is being advanced by the Hollywood minions and the left-wing minions, whether it be under Nancy Pelosi, Hillary Clinton, or in this case, the stealth leftist of leftists, the silk smooth Barack, or shall I say Barry Obama. Up next is an interview I did earlier today, a great one that you're not going to want to miss, right here on the Savage Nation. I suggest you be here, because otherwise you'll be absolutely nowhere.
Savage.
The scandals, the hate flowing from the Democratic candidates makes you wonder if there is a lesser of these two evils and whether this is an opportunity for McCain. Grace Vuoto is the executive director of the Edmund Burke Institute for American Renewal. She wrote an article about this, and she is here with us today. Grace, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you for having me on the program. Great to be with you.
We've been seeing in the past few weeks Hillary and Barack attacking, getting caught in scandal after scandal. What's your view of all of this?
Yes. In fact, what we have seen in the last few weeks is an escalation in this campaign for the Democratic nomination, with both sides taking their lobs against one another to a higher and higher level. And when I say higher level, I don't mean a high moral ground. I mean, in essence, they are assaulting each other in ways that can potentially be more and more damaging. And what happened was, Obama, as the entire nation knows, was faced with this controversy regarding his pastor. The pastor made inflammatory remarks, and he was asked to account for how he could possibly have sat in the pew of Trinity United Church listening to sermons uttered by a pastor who could make such incendiary and troubling statements. In response to that assault that was waged against Obama in the media, asking him to account for it, he did come out with a brilliant speech trying to explain the pastor's comments. And to some extent, if we look at the polls, it seems that he is rebounding out of this controversy. This is not to say, though, that the questions which are foremost in the voters, in many voters' minds regarding this controversy, have been laid to rest. But it does seem to appear, it appears to be that at least amongst Democrats, they're willing to transcend this pastor controversy. What we saw recently is that Hillary Clinton decided to jump into the fray. And in an interview in which he gave to the Pittsburgh Tribune Review on March 25th, she declared that she would have left her church if her pastor made the comments that Mr. Wright had made. Hence, what she was doing by giving this interview and addressing the controversy head-on is she was essentially trying to keep this in the limelight, perhaps to deflect from the fact that she has been in the hot seat herself regarding what appears to be an obviously mendacious story regarding her trip to Bosnia, in which she claimed to be under sniper fire, when in reality she was not under sniper fire. She was greeted by a lovely young lady who gave her flowers. So what we have been seeing in the last few weeks is Obama in the hot seat over the Reverend Wright controversy, and then Clinton being in the hot seat over the Bosnia issue, and both candidates facing increasingly personal attacks. So what Senator Clinton did during her interview in the Pittsburgh Tribune is she tried to add more fuel to the pastor controversy. And she tried to do this by also taking the high moral ground herself by declaring, "He would not have been my pastor. You don't choose your family, but you choose what church you want to attend." So there she's trying to clearly distinguish herself from Obama as a person that has better judgment and a person that would never accept the kind of incendiary statements that his pastor made. What I raise in my article is this fundamental question. Indeed, she is saying that she wouldn't have accepted such a pastor. But in retaliation, Obama could simply say he would never have accepted to be married to an individual like Bill Clinton. Hillary has essentially said that Obama was in error to be silent during Mr. Wright's sermons. And one can very easily say, well, Obama's acceptance of Reverend Wright, despite his flaws, is no different than her acceptance of her husband, despite his flaws. And as we know, Bill has very, very serious flaws. Hillary has stood by him despite his continued mistreatment and harassment of countless women. So the point that I'm raising is she is trying to peg Obama as somewhat weak and lacking in judgment, not standing up for the truth before this pastor, and nonetheless retaining his relationship with the pastor despite the pastor's flaws. But we can ask the very same question of her. And if we do ask the very same question of her in her relationship with Bill Clinton, I think she comes out the worse for wear. Because after all, say what you want about Obama, he has distanced himself from the pastor to some extent. He has said that those statements were unacceptable, whereas in Hillary's case, she has never publicly denounced her husband for his mistreatment of women. She has never basically asked him to apologize or come forward to apologize. She has never even acknowledged publicly what he has done to women. And yet she pretends to be a champion of women's rights. So I think that if Hillary persists in this line of attack, she's really treading on very, very dangerous ground, precisely because Obama can say to her, "You accept Bill, regardless of his many flaws, in the very same manner that I accept the pastor, regardless of the pastor's flaws."
Many serious conservatives see McCain as a less than perfect candidate for the Republican nomination. What do conservatives do at this point?
Excellent question, and one that many conservatives are struggling with. I think that many conservatives have made a mistake in pouncing on Obama and bringing down his candidacy. I think the strategy that conservatives should follow from the beginning and should continue to follow, even though it seems that they've broken ranks recently, the best strategy would be to make sure that first Hillary is knocked out of the race. And the reason I say that this is of primordial importance is because I think that the Clintons present a threat to the American Republic that is far, far greater than any threat that Obama can present to us. So I would advise all conservatives to hold fire against Obama. Let him win the nomination. If we take the chance of allowing Hillary Clinton to win the nomination, we're fighting on an entirely different plane. And that plane is between an extremely corrupt individual who has no regard, as we know very well by her complicity in the Clinton scandals of the 1990s, who has no regard for the laws of the land, nor the protocol of the land. And so I would suggest to all conservatives that they are making a fatal flaw in thinking that it is wise to weaken both candidates. It is not the way to go. We must first ensure that we eliminate the most corrupt element in this campaign, which is the Clintons. The danger we face is that if she does win, she may not be as easy to defeat as one would imagine, because as we saw in the 1990s, the Clintons get their entire media and Democratic surrogates to close ranks with them. And they do this because they are effective fundraisers and they do wield power within the Democratic Party. And so if Hillary wins, essentially, conservatives are not just going up against an individual who has all kinds of baggage. They're going up against an entire establishment, and I think that risk is too great to take.
Well, at least that's a direct approach that doesn't involve the backstabbing that we're used to dealing with from the Clintons. If conservatives follow the Goldwater model, which is to be directly and openly conservative, won't we ultimately come back stronger than ever?
You're quite right. The vote is a patriotic act, and it's supposed to be cast in truth, in honesty, and in integrity. And I think when we violate that, I think we are really sleeping with the devil. And as you know, when you sleep with the devil, you rarely get away with it.
Grace Voto, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it was great speaking with you. Thanks again for having me on.
Savage.
You know, when you talk about the enemy within, one could draw a very good comparison to the HIV virus, where a foreign virus invades a body and literally takes over a defense cell and duplicates itself inside the defense cell and so then kills the body by destroying its ability to defend itself. It's almost identical to the Madeleine Albrights who are now running around acting like they're our friends when, in fact, they're working for the enemy. So let's go to health for a minute. Of course, I talk every day about the health of a nation, but let's talk about the health of a body. Here's what Mark Twain said in Letters from the Earth. Disease, that is the main force, the diligent force, the devastating force. It attacks the infant the moment it is born. It furnishes it one malady after another, croup, measles, mumps, bowel troubles, teething pains, scarlet fever, and other childhood specialties. It chases the child into youth and furnishes it some specialties for that time of life. It chases the youth into maturity, maturity into age, and age into the grave. Mark Twain. And now I want to read you just one little entry that I wrote back in when it was published in 82 in Healing Children Naturally by yours truly on page 142 under chocolate. Now just listen to this, because many of you are chocolateholics and you've been told that chocolate's good. It contains antioxidants and I can eat more chocolate. And I can even give it to Johnny in the morning. Let's give him some cocoa. That's what good old Doc Brown told me. Pay no attention to those quacks in the nutrition field. Give Johnny anything he wants to eat, because here's this little shiny pill called Ritalin. We call it medication, not a pill. And that medication will keep Johnny real, real stable. So here's what I wrote. Chocolate comes from the cacao tree, an evergreen of the Coca-Cola family. It does not contain caffeine, but it does contain another stimulant, theobromine, which has effects quite similar to those of caffeine. When used to make cocoa, the amount of theobromine present would be comparable to the caffeine in a cup of weak coffee or tea, approximately 30 milligrams. Of course, chocolate is also a saturated fat and high in calories, and when used in cocoa, it is usually sweetened with sugar. Now listen to the following few sentences, please. Copper is also abundant in chocolate and must be avoided by hyperactive children who often have low zinc and high copper levels. For the same reasons, we in the Savage home never use cocoa or hot chocolate for our children. They may seem innocent enough, but in fact are great nutritional time bombs filled with sucrose, bleaches, copper, artificial flavorings, and excess calories. Stick to warm milk flavored with carob powder and sweetened with honey, which makes a fine bedtime drink. Now, I've given you a lot of information there. I'm sure that the oafs in the media will say, oh, Bashaw, you give that child cocoa. Never mind what anyone says. After all, I went to high school, and I know about golf. What are you? Oh, you give him meat, and you give him chocolate. You give him whatever medication that good old doctor has you give him, because those doctors have the interests of your child at heart. And they know, all of them know, what good medication is. Well, it's identical to the political situation. You going to believe in Dr. Baker? Dr. Baker has just given you a recipe for destroying the nation. That's what old Dr. James Baker has just prescribed. He may look like the doctor of yesteryear. You know, after all, he speaks like the old, good old American doctors. Tall, good-looking, speaks with a nice southern drawl, comes from a good law firm, great family. Well, he reminds me of the doctors that used to advertise Chesterfield cigarettes in the magazines of the 1930s. Exactly the same thing. They'd have doctors say that I smoke Chesterfield for health because it's good for the T-zone. They were doctors, too. Well, now we have political doctors who are just like that doctor who used to sell Chesterfield. And the case before you is good old Dr. Baker. So if I've gone a little off topic, I've gone right back to topic because that's how I do it. And that's the test of a good mind, is the ability to go far afield and come right back to the point that he's been trying to make all along. Now, I know if I keep up this health stuff, what's going to happen. I'll get a call. I'll say, Mike, I'm like that guy, that woman on the plane that had to bring matches on the plane the other day for flatulence. Mike, I asked, is there something I could take for so I don't have to take 10 books of matches on my next flight to Miami, Mike? What can I eat? Mike, while you're at on the thing for the matches, for the flatulence on the plane, can you give me something to make the down south part stand a little north? Point north like a compass needle, Mike. I don't want to like that Viagra stuff. It gives me a headache and I see blue. And while you're at it, Mike, I'm going to get the same thing. I don't want to do health. Please, no health cures. Maine, Susie, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just have a really quick question for you. I have a 16-year-old son. He goes to the gym two or three times a week, but he is overweight. I decided to take him to a nutritionist, and I just want to know what your opinion of nutritionists are they helpful? Can they make a difference?
Most of them are quacks, uneducated adults who know nothing. They have no credentials whatsoever, but they are selling you a bill of goods based on other people's work. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't an occasional nutritionist with real training and a real degree and really understand what they're talking about, but a lot of them are in it and don't really know what they're talking about. You have to look at their education. You have to look at their experience. You have to look at their certifications. Now, you may say, well, I'll go to an RD. They're even worse. The research dietitian degree is a complete reflection of the AMA principles of diet, which are totally toxic and know nothing about curing people through food. So I don't know what to recommend. Well, I do know what to recommend, actually. I would recommend that you go to a medical doctor who has a subspecialty in nutrition. That would be what I would recommend. There are some very good doctors around who have spent a lot of years studying nutrition, and that's where I would take my son. As far as weight loss, I mean, there's no mystery to it. You know, it takes self-control, and it takes controlling the diet. I don't know what you need to go to a doctor for that for. Do you?
No, actually, his medical doctor did recommend this nutritionist to him, so I think
Well, so you're working with a medical doctor who probably hasn't. But the problem is, who is the nutritionist? A lot of them are self-taught. They read three articles in Cosmopolitan, and suddenly they're a nutritionist. So you got to look into that. Thanks for the call. I have a show that could be called How Not to Make Friends and Influence People. But you got to think about it. How did people survive for eons without nutritionists? How did people survive for eons without going to these quacks and taking a Ritalin? How did your great-grandfather survive? How did they survive the Middle Ages eating shoe leather and they were still able to read and write? How is that possible that Western civilization was built before Ritalin was discovered by the quack establishment called the pharmaceutical medical establishment. How is it possible? There must have been people who are hyperactive then. There must have been. How did they deal with it? Everybody knows people like that. They didn't need drugs. They walked a lot. They talked a lot. But they somehow got through life without having to take a drug to turn it into a zombie. 1-800-449-8255. It's the parents who are behind ADHD. They're lazy and they're feeding the child junk food. 90% of the ADHD cases can be cured if the parents were educated as to how they're poisoning their child, number one, and how they're being lazy and not feeding the child properly. Much of this information is well established. It's been lost because the pharmaceutical and medical establishments want you to lose it, just as the political establishment wants you to forget history in order to manipulate you. It's the same exact thing. It's called the establishment. They control everything. Now, if you look at the control of the media by the few madmen who control it all, you'll find out, unfortunately, they also control the educational establishment through boards that they sit on. They also control the pharmaceutical establishment through boards. They sit on multiple boards. So the same power mad lunatic who runs the media that tells you things about food that are untrue and tells you things about politics that are patently false will also be peddling you drugs that are unnecessary and peddling you diets that are clearly harmful. That's called interlocking corporate directorships. Check it out. It was once well established and well understood that interlocking corporate directorships would ultimately lead to the demise of the American. They were 100% right, and we're living through it now. I'm getting the calls right now, and I'll do them. Actually, this is fun. Beverly in Houston, Texas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I wanted to ask you a question. Number one, what can women do for PMS? I went to a doctor.
Oh, boy, did you open up a very, very tragic subject, because there are things you can do, but I'm not about to give you medical information on this show at this time. I really only wanted to bring up this book because the ADHD came up as a break from the political discussion. But there are many things you can do for PMS. And I think, truthfully, and this is not a bad idea, if you go to one of these mega health food operations around, you know, like Whole Foods kind of thing, is there one near you?
Yes, sir. And I take a lot of vitamins and I eat salmon.
No, but listen to me. If you go there, you know, you can get an education unto itself. Now, some of it's quackery and some of it's hucksterism, but some of what you're going to read in some of those brochures is worth thinking about. I'll tell you where I'd begin today, Beverly, with anything. The Internet has become the great unifier of knowledge. Some of it's junk, but some of it's excellent. I would simply do a search on the PMS and health, and I would read as much as I could, and I would sift and I would sort. And then I would try to consult with a medical doctor, an MD, who definitely has training in nutrition. Don't just go to any old Joe Blow MD who knows nothing about nutrition. They need to have studied nutrition. They need to specialize in it along with their medical degree. And you're going to get some wonderful advice right there. But I'm not going to give any advice today on this subject.
Savage.
One of the ways I take it pleasure in life, and maybe you'll consider it mean-spirited or even crazy, I can't help it. I have a little calendar on my wall, and every time a famous leftist of the 60s dies from natural causes, I check them off, and I have a little tiny celebration, as it was a little death cake. And so when Kunstler died, I had a little celebration with myself when Abbie Hoffman finally met his reward and went across the River Styx to hell where it belonged. I celebrated when Allen Ginsberg died. I celebrated. I have a little list. I'm just waiting. As they go one after the other, I tick them off. And because I know once they're all gone, the big mouths of the 60s, the country can survive. You see, President Bush represents the polar opposite of that camp of left-wing garbage. They had taken over the country. The left-wing garbage and filth had taken over the country. They had infiltrated, penetrated every high level of government. And frankly, we almost lost America. Most of you can never understand how close we came to losing our freedom. You thought you were getting freedom, you were getting slavery. You thought you were getting nationhood, you were getting one worldism. But we have respectable terrorists in America who are in very high places who should be purged by George W. Bush. And I believe that we're going to see it.
Savage.
Too much for lunch. I'm sleepy. My mind works fine. I'm just dozy. I mean, you know, it's after Thanksgiving. It's cold. We have the high 30s. Someone will scream global warming. However, I must tell you, I've studied temperature in the Bay Area going back over 100 years. The days were just as cold in December, January, February, as they are now. I've seen snow up on the mountains here. The occasional snow. Everyone loves it. But don't tell that to the, let's say, the Neolithic thinkers amongst us who are sure that we're causing global warming. But anyway, so, you see, here's the problem, is when you try to do good for yourself, sometimes you do bad. Take me, for example. I went to an Asian restaurant to eat some lunch. I don't know, you know, it's an Asian restaurant. As I tell them, no fat, I mean, no oil, or less oil and no sugar, and it usually comes out fairly good. So I finish eating, and I'm starving. I had the plate lunch, and I'm starving. I go out, I walk right into McDonald's nearby. I said, why am I doing this? I said to myself, why am I doing this? I just ate lunch in the Asian restaurant. Answer, because I'm starving. And I sneakily ordered a fish burger, but then I said without cheese and without sauce with extra onions. In other words, I was, it's like the guy, the devil on my left shoulder said, I have the fish burger. The angel on my right shoulder said, all right, at least cut out the cheese, please. The alarm bells were going off. And add onions to it. Onions. So I said, all right. Then the Mexican woman says to me, do you want the sandwich? I said, what do you mean? I knew what she meant. I said, no, give me the French fries, too. Now, I got to tell you something. With the Diet Coke, with the thing, I scoffed it down like it was a dessert. It was unbelievable after the good Asian meal. Now, there's no moral to the story other than there's only so much you can do in the world that's good for you. You know what I mean? And then at a certain point, you just got to enjoy a meal once in a while. Like last night, I went to a local hole-in-the-wall, disgusting Thai place that no one goes to except a few local people. The food's excellent. We feel very bad for the guy. His children are always in there doing homework. They're very hardworking people, and his food is very good. It's awful. It's like next to a laundromat. There's nothing more depressing than eating in a restaurant in a mall, strip mall, next to a laundromat. You say, well, why do you do that to yourself? You can afford any restaurant in the city. Answer, because his food is good, and I don't care about style. I care about the food. I go to eat. I don't go to be seen, I don't go to be heard, and I don't go to, certainly don't want to hear people talk, which is unfortunately this dump. My luck at a table nearby in this empty restaurant was a classic Marin County liberal couple from hell. Let me see if I could describe them. Just say a classic liberal couple from hell. Now, they're in a dump of a restaurant. Every platitude known to liberals came out of that woman's filthy mouth. From global warming, while she's stuffing a fat yap with food, she's talking about global warming. Then she goes on to, did you hear the story about blacks being underrepresented in law firms, Bob? Oh, yes. Blacks get into major league law firms, but they don't make partnership. Blah, blah, blah. So I start to fume. I'm boiling, and I'm trying not to say a word. I'm like behind a tree in this dump. Like a cheap tree, a fake tree, and I'm trying not to see them, but I can hear them. And she won't shut up. Now, I got to tell you, I had a few drinks before dinner, and it made me somewhat loquacious. So I started to talk to my long-suffering Mrs. S as loudly as I could to counter the global warming argument and to counter the blacks in the law firm argument. Then I got outright insulting. And, you know, one thing led to another. Eventually, they left. Fortunately, they were smart enough to not make it any worse than it was. Why did they have to do a political discourse in a restaurant? Now, I do this for a living on the radio. You have an option to turn the show off or to turn the show on, to turn the volume up or turn the volume down. When you go to a restaurant, you don't want to hear a moron shooting his mouth off about politics. I find it the most offensive thing in the world for people to speak loud in restaurants, by the way. Some of them scream. But some of them scream about political points of view, global warming, blacks not getting ahead, you name it. You name the issue. And then to top it off, as they were leaving the restaurant, they say to the owner of the Thai restaurant, oh, we're sailing to Thailand or going on a sailing trip in Thailand next week and, I don't know, some whatever, Phuket, I don't know where they were going. And they do the bow with the hands together. He looked at them like they were crazy. He could care less whether they're going there. But you see, they were eating in the Thai restaurant for cultural and social reasons, to bond with the simple people of the third world. So that's last night. That's two in a row. I had the Thai brain beating last night. And then for lunch today, I had to go from the Vietnamese lunch, which was excellent, by the way, but skimpy. I'm not 98 pounds living on a handful of rice, fighting, with the NVA here in the woods. I need a real meal, an American meal. I have a radio show to do. Please, lay it on. So I went from a somewhat healthy meal to a pig out meal. If I had eaten regularly, I wouldn't have wound up in McDonald's. This has nothing to do with anything. But the point is this is what I have to live through.
Savage.
I wrote the best-selling book, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, as you know, because it's 100% true. That's why it resonated with the intelligent America. They understood immediately that the zeitgeist of the title said it all. It said it all, because the only explanation for liberalism is madness. In some cases, mild, in some cases, severe. How could they think these things unless they're crazy? Sometimes they're not totally crazy, just partly crazy, a piece crazy. But they're crazy for the things that they do. But I once knew 20 years ago, I knew a medical doctor who was an early pioneer in acupuncture in America. He was in Sausalito on a houseboat. I forget his name. He was the nicest guy in the world. But he told me that according to acupuncture theory, and he was a good one. He had studied in China. He was first a legitimate, straightforward American medical doctor type of guy. And in the 70s, he went to China. And he came back and he incorporated acupuncture, and it worked so well that he gave up regular medicine and was only an acupuncturist, blah, blah, blah. But he said, according to acupuncture theory, there's a thing called a sorter, S-O-R-T-E-R, that goes out in some people. And I said, what does that mean? It's the ability to sort out what is relatively important and what is relatively unimportant in a person's life. In other words, they distort. Their sorter is out. So, in other words, they would hit certain pressure points to make the sorter work again, so that people could get things in order in their life. That's so typical of people who are extremist unable to sort things out in their mind as to what's important, what's unimportant, whether it be in their own life or in the life of the society or their place in society, what's important. Their sorters are off. That's a form of illness. Whether you want to call it a mental illness is another story. But I will tell you that a lot of the statements that come out of the liberal orthodoxy is an example of this distortion.
Savage.